From the studios at Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette, and this is Idaho Matters. After 20 hours of hearings, the Boise City Council voted to let Interfaith Sanctuary move from its downtown location to a new building on State Street. That vote was 4-2 in favor of the move. And to get those votes, members of the council put a cap on the number of beds at the sanctuary. They also added 30 new conditions to the project. So joining us is BoiseDev.com senior reporter Margaret Carmel, who has been following this story from the beginning. Margaret, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So Margaret, quickly take us back to the beginning of the Interfaith project.
So we're going to go back to a time before time. That's how long it feels like.
It feels like it.
Has been going on. So a year and a half ago in January of 2021, Interfaith Sanctuary announced that they were going to buy the former Salvation Army warehouse on State Street and turn it into a larger shelter. And at the time, they pitched a proposal with 270 something beds. It was definitely closer to 300. And they started neighborhood meetings. And those neighborhood meetings were tense. From the get-go, residents who lived around the project were really frustrated that they didn't have enough a heads up about the plans. They had to read about it in the media. And frankly, they were just really frustrated about the idea of, people in the homeless community being in a large, a shelter in their neighborhood and potential impacts to public safety, littering, all sorts of problems that they raised over and over again, particularly because Interfaith Sanctuary is a low barrier shelter, which means that it is meant to be there for anybody. You don't need to participate in religious programming. You don't have to be sober to be there. Pretty much the rules are just if you, are not aggressive, you cannot bring weapons, but if you're, but generally it is supposed to be open to everyone, regardless of their sexual identity, gender identity, anything like that. And
okay, so
all sorts of other factors. So then what ended up happening is then we had a long year of tense meetings. We had then the city had a task force where they said they were going to site the shelter and find a solution. That task force ultimately decided they weren't going to suggest a location and they were just going to suggest some conditions or some best practices. It was discussed more. And then it went to planning and zoning in January of this year. And we had weeks of hearings, long hearings late into the night. And ultimately, after over, I think it was 16 hours of hearings, planning and zoning decided to turn down the project. They said that basically they couldn't prove that the project wouldn't have an adverse impact on public safety. And Interfaith Sanctuary then appealed it to City Council to have a vote. And then we had another couple months where City Council sat with the project and the questions. And then we had hearings all last week and then the vote.
So 5 days of hearings last week, Margaret, before the council, anything significant stand out during those 5 days?
Well, it was really interesting to watch because during the hearings, council members asked questions of the lawyer and other representatives for Interfaith, the neighbors, all sorts of people. And you could kind of try to gauge how council members were feeling about the project based on the questions they were asking. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of tough questions, particularly for Interfaith. And at times it felt like watching the hearings, council members, you could almost see them changing their mind, going back and forth and seeing both sides and weighing the pros and cons. And so whenever we came into Monday night's meeting, there was a lot of, I had no idea what was going to happen because I had seen so many, tough questions on both groups and just all council members like heavily engaged in the question of how to address this question, this problem.
So as I mentioned in the beginning, Margaret, they did get this yes vote 4-2, but there were 30 conditions that were put in place. Where did that come from?
So the conditions came from the city's Housing and Community Development Department. They kicked off the meeting and they basically said, we studied best practices for shelter. We studied the project. And if you approve it, here are the 30 things that we think you should require them to do to make it to lessen the impact on the neighborhood. And those conditions are, and that came Monday night, the fifth day of these hearings before the vote. And those conditions ranged a bunch of different things. Like they included small things like including a disposal for needles. They also included a lot of rules about shelter operations and requirements for de-escalation, and also requirements that if someone were to be asked to leave during the shelter, they can't at the shelter from, you know, overnight, they can't just be kicked out onto the street to then wander the neighborhood and potentially get into some issues. What they required is that, okay, if someone gets removed from the shelter, Interfaith needs to put them in the van and drive them to Boise Rescue Mission to stay the night there, or potentially be discharged to the custody of Boise Police to go to a psychiatric facility or a crisis center or something like that. You know, there was a lot of focus on, we don't want folks that are, okay, if you get kicked out of the of Interfaith, where are you going to go? And there was, and a lot of the conditions address that problem of how are we going to do that? And the conditions also require, kind of built this process for how the neighbors are going to be able to communicate with Interfaith to try to address problems as they arise.
Well, it sounds like, Margaret, with some of those conditions in particular, if someone does get kicked out, because in fairness, that is what I think some people who live in that area are concerned with. It seems that it allows these neighbors to potentially have a voice in this. Have you heard from any neighbors since this vote? And what have their thoughts been about these conditions? Because, I mean, they're going to move forward with this shelter now.
Well, it's kind of hard to say exactly what's going to happen. So there is the possibility, as with any project, that the neighbors could file in court and have this be reviewed by a judge. We don't know if that's going to happen. The night of the vote, the Veterans Park Neighborhood Association posted on Facebook. They said they're still digesting the decision. I saw an anti-shelter Interfaith relocation page, you know, posting, you know, the author of the page posting, "I'm in tears. How could a project with 30 conditions ever be approved?" You know, there's a lot of frustration there. But a letter I saw today from the Collister Neighborhood Association that went out to its members basically said, "I get that a lot of you guys are frustrated by this, but now we need to work with them and we need to come together and make this the best solution that we can." There wasn't any sort of indication in that letter that they were going to continue to fight, but I don't know. I really don't know. And so right now we're kind of waiting to see if they decide to file in court. I'd heard that the groups in opposition to the shelter had engaged with an attorney. But I don't know if they plan to file. And that's something I'm watching for, because if they plan to file, that could go to district court and it could be several months before we see that in district court. And then we see a decision, and then that decision could further be appealed to the Idaho Supreme Court, which we have seen. So, but I don't know what's going to happen now.
Is it fair to say, Margaret, that those 30 new conditions help sway some of the council to a yes vote?
Honestly, I don't know what played into that. You know, it's hard for me to say as a reporter. I'd love to be a mind reader. It'd make my job easier, but unfortunately no I'm kidding. Not. But it wouldn't surprise me if that was part of it. And there was a feeling of, okay, we've got the city staff who specializes in homelessness and housing, and they proposed some of, you know, solutions that addressed a lot of the questions. But I really don't know what was the final tipping point. And even watching the long 7 hours of deliberation Monday night, there were times where I was watching council members and going, oh, that person's going to vote no. And then they would say something an hour later. And I'm thinking, wait, are they going to vote yes? It was really intense, because you could just see how tough this question is, because I think everyone up there is a really conscientious person and they were seeing both sides. And they were also contemplating, what do we do without Interfaith, and how does this nexus with the code, and how do we make this work? And how does the comprehensive plan factor in with all of this? I mean, it was a tough decision. So this is not the nice, neat answer you wanted, but it's hard to say exactly what swayed them. I think there were many, many factors at play.
So the two council members who voted no, did they give any reasoning behind their no vote, Margaret?
So the no votes were City Council Member Patrick Bajent and City Council Member Lucy Willits. And they both said that they just couldn't find a way to condition the project so that it did not have impact, an undue burden on the neighborhood, which is the legal term. And they mentioned the importance of addressing the housing issue, addressing the homelessness issue, but they felt like the project was going to have too much of an impact on the neighborhood, and they couldn't vote for it given their what they had heard and seen. And let's also not forget to note that City Council President Elaine Clegg, who voted for the project, said herself, she goes, "I came into this tonight thinking I could vote and then ultimately vote for it. And then ultimately she changed her mind." But she was very clear in her comments that basically said to Interfaith, "This had better work. And I will not be shy about revoking your permit or putting more conditions on your project if this doesn't work." And that is very clearly, that's some pretty direct language of, you'd better hold up your end of the bargain and not damage this neighborhood, or we're going to do something about it. That's some strong language.
It is. And so, Margaret, with those conditions then, these 30 new conditions, the city could, as you mentioned then, just from my understanding, they could revoke this permit if they do not follow these conditions. I mean, these are rules that they must now adhere to.
Right. And, you know, but one of the questions that got asked over and over again in the hearing was, how are we going to hold you accountable? Like, does the city have the code enforcement ability to, you know, hold people accountable? And how is this good neighbor agreement going to work if, you know, neighbors are bringing up complaints? You know, how is it going to ensure that Interfaith is going to be held to this standard? And ultimately, that's a question I think is important to ask, because city staff they have so much to do. You know, they can't hire a full-time person to sit there and watch Interfaith Sanctuary do their work, right? And that question of enforcement and the question of bandwidth, and does the city have the bandwidth to do this, and will they revoke the permit? Because at the end of the day, if Interfaith moves over there and they, you know, they've sold their River Street building and they get their permit revoked, that puts 200 homeless members of the homeless community on the streets of Boise. That is a hard thing for the city to do. So it would not surprise me, you know, and that's why this decision was weighed so heavy, is because yes, they can revoke that permit. That is something that they can do under the law, but oof, that is something I can imagine the city doesn't want to do. So we'll see what happens. And I'm going to be very curious whenever they have a 6-month review after it opens to see how that goes.
Yeah, no good answer for this, it seems, Margaret. I appreciate all of your reporting on this, Margaret. I mean, literally since this started a year and a half ago. So much, we appreciate you coming on the program.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. We've been talking with BoiseDev.com senior reporter Margaret Carmel about the Boise City Council vote to allow Interfaith Sanctuary to move to State Street. Now, the process to get to this point has been a long one for Interfaith, especially for its executive director, Jody Peterson, who has been working on this idea for more than a year now, and she is joining us to talk more. Jody, welcome to the program.
Hey, Gemma, how are you?
I'm good. Hey, Jody, can you take us back to the beginning of this process? Why did Interfaith want to move from its downtown Boise building ultimately to the old Salvation Army warehouse, which is on State Street?
Well, it starts before that. We had actually been looking for a different location for about 3 years because of our limitations in the current location with the Cooper Court alleyway and our inability to really protect our staff and guests from that area that does not belong to us, which is well known as Cooper Court. So because we had gotten so intensely focused on programming and creating more programs that would allow people to stay inside, we knew that we needed more space to accommodate more people. And then the pandemic happened, and the funding came in to allow us to open up our hotel shelter. So we increased our service to 100 additional guests. And knowing that eventually the pandemic funding would come to an end, we had moved families with children, our most medically fragile, and our seniors to that hotel. And the idea of having to unhouse those guests because our current facility is not big enough to serve that addition, that was just not something that we wanted to do. We didn't want to have to get rid of programming that we were able to develop. And so we kind of sped up our process and were very lucky that a building had been on the market for a while. A deal had fallen through. So it had a price reduction, and it was one of the only buildings we had ever looked at that was cited as a shelter. And so that felt like this was the right time and the right building. And that's what got us to this.
And you did have to then sell your downtown location in order to afford this new location.
Yeah. I mean, most private nonprofits don't have,
right.
Yes, it was definitely part of how we were able to acquire that building was to sell the building that we're currently in.
Jody, you got a lot of pushback from neighbors in the community where the old Salvation Army building is located on State Street. Were you surprised by the amount of pushback?
Yes. At first I was surprised. And then I started to, you know, try and understand because, you know, clearly I work for the homeless community. So I know to who I serve and I know my staff and everything. But honestly, imagining this shelter moving into a neighborhood where there's 250 people that are unknown to the community that are going to be sent out on the streets every day, what they imagined, it was so fair for them to be scared and to have real opposition. So we tried to kind of navigate that. After so many meetings and really trying to share specifically who we were and what our programming was, when it didn't quiet the voices, that was really concerning. And that's when it became a much more difficult process to navigate.
So now the city, with this yes vote, they put 30 new conditions in place. They imposed these. One is that you can't operate overflow capacity at the new location. You have been struggling, though, with overflow capacity, especially in the winter. How will this work? Because as city council said, I mean, you must adhere to these conditions.
Yeah. And the strength in which everyone's talking about, you must adhere. Like, it's a little hard to hear because Interfaith Sanctuary has always operated in partnership with Our Path Home and the city of Boise. And our practices have really never been questioned. And when those conditions were added onto our application, we are thrilled to have the conversation, the partnership, and the ability to hear from all different parts to ensure that we are the best shelter practices. And many of the conditions that are being added on are things that were already developed for the new building because they could be. And so we are committed to being a great neighbor and providing the best shelter, the best safety, and the best cooperation. So the voice of how this is being presented is, it's like it's almost lifting the conversation again to a negative. This is all really positive. A city council and Our Path Home and you know, even planning and zoning, this whole process has helped us to create something that really is probably the best shelter practices you will see. And I think we should be proud of that.
Right. But I think it's also fair to be the devil's advocate here and to say that in your eyes, it is a positive. In the eyes of some people who live in that neighborhood, this is still a negative. And are you concerned that the Veterans Park Neighborhood Association may not just back down. I mean, they could take this farther up the legal chain.
Well, first, what I meant was it was a positive process as far as having so much conversation around how to make sure mm-hmm. we were creating the best shelter. I didn't mean it was positive for, you know, this neighborhood yet, because there's a lot of unknowns to them. And I'm hopeful in this time, because we still have design review, building permits, and construction, that we can get to know each other better. And that there's time to build those good neighborhood agreements. And we really are able to show this is a shelter that keeps people housed. You can stay there all day if you want. There's bathrooms, there's showers, there's a kitchen, there's a food service training program, there's an on-site recovery program, on-site well-being program, early education, family programming, case management, supportive services, medical support. So when you're looking at what is the negative impact in a neighborhood, it's when a homeless person has no place to be all day and they have to navigate the streets and they have to find a place to use a bathroom and they have to find somewhere where they can maybe have, you know, a rest because they're tired and they can't come back into a shower until the end of the day. This design mitigates impact. And so I believe once you can see who we serve in this building, it's 96 families with children. It's 22 medically fragile. It's single men and women who are employed, who are senior citizens, who are looking for housing. They have stability, but they haven't gotten to housing yet. It's a group of people who are deserving to live in a neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Jody, I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking about this today. We appreciate your perspective. We've been talking with Interfaith Sanctuary Executive Director Jody Peterson. Thanks, Jody.
Thanks, Gemma.
Up next, an exhibit on Idaho's Constitution goes on a road trip so you can take a peek.